right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, and we're here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. We'll get underway. Yeah, we had Triple Play Thursday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. One artist, three songs. For that, we're going to talk about Christmas movies. We got a busy show for tomorrow, so we're going to, before we take our holiday break, because Esmeralda's going to be here and Jeff Tuckman's going to be here, so I want to take the opportunity to jump into the your favorite Christmas movies and movies that you watch every year and which ones they are and all that cool stuff and the classics and even the weird ones. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Right now, though, we want to welcome Dan Feinberg to the show. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're going to talk about some of the best stuff from TV this past year. He joins us every 2 weeks, and let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right, how have you been, sir?
Oh, it's the end of the year as we know it, and I feel fine.
All right, well, let's get right to it. You have the 10 best TV shows of 2018 you wrote about, and then the next 10 best.
And then 10 more honorable mention, too. So really could go on forever. And as I keep telling people, if their favorite show didn't make that top 30, it means I hate that show and think it's horrible, and therefore that they have no taste.
It's always nice. It's always nice to be subtle, Dan. That's good.
I want to make that clear to everyone. No, like a dozen different people, of course, you know, on Twitter today, asked me where their favorite show was, and in at least half of the cases, my answer was it probably would have been in my next 10 or maybe my next 10. Yeah. I like a lot of shows that didn't make my list. Just you got to draw a line somewhere, and 30 is a hell of an artificial place to draw the line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look, and again, as we speak, every time you're on, Dan, we talk about that there is just so much TV. So obviously, you know, your lists at the end of the year are going to increase because there's so much to see.
It is true. The FX annual tabulation of the scripted TV haul came out last week, and the answer for the number of scripted television shows in 2018 was 495.
Oh my God!
and that is before you get to the amount of time that I spend watching documentary series, because those don't count as scripted shows. Or the amount of time I spend watching Survivor or American Idol or Top Chef or anything like that, because those don't count either. There's a lot of TV.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm enjoying. I really enjoyed the first two episodes of Top Chef. That's all I'm saying.
Yes, people seem to be cooking good food so far.
Though absolutely.
I don't know that there's anyone. I don't know if there's anyone crazy, and I kind of like there isn't the sort of mad molecular gastronomy scientist.
Yeah, well, we already have a jerk. Brandon. Brandon is the jerk of the season. We've got that. We've got that already. But I like the characters. I think they're good, and I like what they're cooking so far. And I like the location. But I just like the show. You know, I mean, I just happen to love Top Chef. It's my favorite. So
I'm right there with you, sir.
Okay. All right, great. Well, listen, why don't we just start at, you know, let's do it. You got 30 shows that you pulled out to talk about for 2018. Why don't we just start with 30 and move our way up?
Okay, let me go to the bottom of my list. I did sort of just honorable mention, and so that's really just going to be and I didn't do blurbs for these.
Okay,
so
that's fine.
My number, and these are in alphabetical order, but my third 10 of 2018 includes Barry, Counterpart on Stars, The Good Fight on CBS All Access, Insecure on HBO, Kidding on Showtime, Last Week Tonight with John Oliver on HBO again, Little Drummer Girl on AMC, Sharp Objects on HBO, Superstore on NBC, and HBO's The Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
Oh, okay. All right. I've seen almost all of those. And
I know that several of them are your favorites.
Yeah.
So are among your favorites.
Yeah, Barry is way up there. John Oliver, you know, is must-see TV as far as I'm concerned. I liked Kidding very much. Yeah, so that's it. And if those, see, that's the thing. If you can think of 20 shows that are better than that, an impressive group right there that you've had. That's interesting. Now, you did write about the other ones, right? The top 20.
Yes, I did. I did full extended blurbulations for the other 20, but at a certain point, just have to draw the line.
No, I
on
understand.
How many blurbs you're right.
I understand. Well, why don't we start with I've got your second 10 in front of me right now, and it starts with Escape to Dannemora, which I thought was really terrific, and I'm glad that you included it.
How far into it are you?
I'm caught up.
Okay, so that's through five?
Five episodes, yes.
Is that what it is? Yeah, okay. I've seen the whole season, so this is based on the full thing. And yeah, I am a sucker for prison escape shows, though somewhat ironically not for Fox's Prison Break, which I got sick of very quickly.
Yeah,
because it turned out it wasn't really about a prison break at all.
No, it wasn't.
It was about brotherhood or some such.
I watched it because it was shot locally and I had friends on it. That's the only reason. That's the only reason that I watched it.
But yes, Escape from Dannemora. Some people I've seen complaining that they feel like it's a little bit slow. I personally really enjoyed the time to get to know the characters played by Paul Dano and Benicio del Toro. This coming week's episode is even more focused on them, and particularly the performance from Patricia Arquette, who's really fantastic. I feel like everyone decided about 3 months ago that the Emmy was already Amy Adams's and that she was unbeatable, and I think there's a fairly strong chance that Patricia Arquette is going to sneak in and steal several of those awards, at least. Probably not the Golden Globe. I feel pretty confident that Amy Adams will still win the Golden Globe.
Yeah.
But yeah, great performances. This past week's episode, which is the fifth, I thought was really breathless and thrilling and exciting.
Yep.
And I think it's just a show with great nuance and that does the genre right. And I noted that there were a bunch of really good miniseries genre efforts this year, including The Terror on AMC, Little Drummer Girl, and Escape at Dannemora, both of which I mentioned in my 20 through 30 range, and then also Netflix's Haunting of Hill House. And both The Terror and Haunting of Hill House would have been, if I'd gone up to a top 40, they definitely would have been in that next 10. So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah. Well, Haunting of Hill House was one of my favorite things that I watched in 2018, for sure. I thought it was just great. I would have ranked that pretty high if I were to make a list, because I thought they did a great job with that.
Entirely fair.
Okay. All right. So let's go to number 19. Sorry for Your Loss.
Yes. The first Facebook Watch show that's ever been in my any of my top lists that I've even watched and finished, because I'm not likely to finish the Catherine Zeta-Jones Facebook Watch thing that's currently on. you think it's going to be a show about grief, and so it's going to be sad and miserable. It turns out that the show has a surprising amount of tonal dexterity. It is very much a show about living, in addition to a show about being sad and grieving. And Elizabeth Olsen is really wonderful, and if anyone had been watching this show at all, Elizabeth Olsen almost certainly would have been in awards conversations, and I'm a little disappointed she wasn't. It's just a show that could have gone wrong in so many different ways and goes right in most of those ways, and I really appreciate the high degree of difficulty it has to do a show about grief that doesn't make you feel miserable the entire time watching it. It is smart and sensitive and sometimes funny and just a really good show.
Okay. All right. I've not seen that. Number 18, one of my favorites, Baskets.
Yes, that would be a collective favorite of and listeners will know that we discuss that basically every week.
even when it's not airing. Even when it's not airing, we discuss it. I love the show so much.
I have to believe that a certain percentage of that show's viewership comes from our relentless banging of the drum for it. So,
I would like to think so, yeah.
Yeah, I honestly had left the show out of my top 30. I'd been in my mind, I sort of got the idea that it was a minor disappointment after last season, and then I was going over the episodes because I wanted to put an episode of From Baskets in my best episodes list. And instead, I started going through the episodes, especially in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
And so many of them were so wonderful. And it was like, oh, okay, I forgot about that. That was great. I forgot about that. That was great.
Yeah,
and by the time I got done going over the descriptions, I was like, oh, this was a wonderful season, especially for Louis Anderson as Christine Baskets. It's just a good and special and strange and magical show, and more people should watch it, but I'm glad and amazed that we've gotten three and now four coming up at some point seasons out of it. I find that remarkable.
Me too. I feel the same way. And I do love it. And Louis Anderson, and again, as we've mentioned, the show's about him now. It's about her. It's about Christine. She's become the main character on the show.
And how smart of Zach Galifianakis and company for realizing it. They didn't need to do that. I mean, Zach Galifianakis is the executive producer and co-creator on the show. There is no reason why he had to come to the correct conclusion that the main character of the show should be Christine, and yet he did. And I consider that an amazing piece of egoless producing on Zach Galifianakis' part, because I can't imagine really and truly, honestly, anybody else coming to that conclusion. The show was supposed to be about, look, it's two Zach Galifianakis.
Right.
And instead, it hasn't been that. And I think it is an amazing sign of restraint on his part, and he deserves a lot of credit for recognizing that.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And again, who would have thought, that like 20 years ago, if someone said to me, Louis Anderson is going to have his career role playing Zach Galifianakis' mother, I would have said, yeah, you're crazy. But that's pretty much what happened.
Several parts of that probably would have confused you 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
I think.
Dan, hang on, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. We're going to take a break here on 720 WG, and we come back. More of the best TV of 2018 from Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, let's take a break. More after this on 720 WG. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're here till 5 a.m. Opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. We'll get underway in a little bit. That's coming up at 312-981-7200, one of our three songs. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, back to our conversation with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Joins us every 2 weeks. It's always great to talk to Dan. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking about his picks for the best TV of 2018. And let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, we're at number 17 on your list of bet. We're counting up to number one. 17 of your best TV shows of 2018. And it's Brockmire, which is a show that I must confess I've only seen one or two episodes of. I enjoyed it, but it's one of those shows that never was on my radar to watch regularly.
It feels like a Nick kind of show to me, honestly. So you might want to carve out time, because I don't know that any show on television makes me laugh harder than Brockmire. When Brockmire hits, so many of the punchlines come from so far off in a different world, and it takes whole seconds to realize where the punchline just came from and how brilliant the writing is. And Hank Azalea has done this amazing job of taking a character who started life as a Funny or Die sketch character, kind of a composite of baseball announcers, only this one as a drunken buffoon, and he's made the character into this really hilariously sad portrait of addiction, loneliness, and professional drive. And it's wonderful to watch. It is such a great performance, and the show is so lewd and inappropriate, and IFC has given them, obviously, the ability to go do whatever the heck they want, mm-hmm. and I appreciate that. Basically, it has become, to some degree, a live-action version of BoJack Horseman, a show that I also love,
yeah.
and I love that. It takes depression and addiction extremely seriously while also being utterly ridiculous and hilarious.
Oh, okay, good. I will definitely catch up with that. I got a Christmas break coming up, Dan. So I'll have some.
It goes by really quick. I caught up about 2.5 weeks ago. I was pretty much the entire second season behind, and I watched most of the second season in a couple hours in an afternoon, laughing the whole way.
It's, oh, that's great!
A real pleasure.
All right, during my break, I have a lot of catching up on stuff to do, including a bunch of for your consideration screeners that are on my coffee table that I have to catch up on before I do my year end movie lists. So, all right. 16 on your list, which I would have put higher. This is just me. It's One Day at a Time, which I love.
It's just a lovely show, and it is a show with more heart than just about anything on TV. It is a perfect example of how to do a multi-cam comedy well in 2018, which there aren't that many examples of. It can be funny, it can be smart, it can be trenchant in its observation of modern America, and the cast is truly wonderful, from Justina Machado to National Treasure, Rita Moreno, to Stephen Tobolowsky, etc., etc. It is a show that is just such a pleasure to watch, and I love One Day at a Time. I wish more people would watch it, because it really is. It's a wide audience show, and it makes me a little sad that it had to fight to the degree that it did to get a third season. So yeah. Hopefully more and more people will hear the buzz, and maybe the third season will finally be a breakthrough, and the fourth season will come easy. I would like that.
And when I first heard that they were doing like a reboot of One Day at a Time, I was an eye roller on that one. It only took me like maybe two episodes to go, oh, okay, I see where they're going with this, and it's great. And the second season I thought was even better than the first season, and I can't wait for the third season. It premieres in February. So I really wonder
if the name was a drawback for a lot of people. I wonder if a lot of people were like you, and I hate that idea, because I hate the idea that a name could turn people off a good show, which has always bothered me with things like Cougar Town, Terriers. I don't understand that mindset. I don't watch shows based on the title, but yeah. There are people out there who clearly think differently.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Next, number 15 is Lodge 49.
I assume you haven't gotten this one yet?
I have not, because I know that I would like it, and yeah, and I hear from a lot of people. I know David Pesquezzi pretty well, and he was very vocal about me watching it, and I still haven't.
It's not going to be for everyone, but I think it's for a lot of the same people that Baskets is for. I think it's for people with a particular kind of quirky sense of humor. In my blurb here, I described it as Terriers and John from Cincinnati and The Big Lebowski rolled into a strange ball that was adapted by Thomas Pynchon.
See, and I like all of those things. So,
and you just have to give it some time, because it's not a show that immediately jumps out and tells you what it is. Sometimes it's a comedy. Sometimes it's a dreamy little almost fantasy. It's got elements of mystery to it. It's really hard to describe, and therefore it was also hard for AMC to promote. And this is one where I'm very glad it got a second season, because it had basically no audience, and so I will just keep telling people for the next few months that this is one that they need to sample, because I think it's a really, really good show.
Okay. And speaking of Wyatt Russell, the more I see him, the more he is exact. He just is so his dad. I mean, it's just I saw the film Overlord, which, by the way, I really enjoyed, and it was really a casting coup for him to be in that movie, because it's the movie itself. Have you seen Overlord?
I have not seen Overlord.
Because it owes so much to John Carpenter that it was just genius casting to put Wyatt Russell in there, because he's just so his dad. But I love the guy, and I'm looking forward to watching Lodge 49. So
I look forward to hearing what you think of it.
Okay, cool. Dan, hang on.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and he writes for the Hollywood Reporter about TV. And we got to get back. We're gonna take a break here for the news, and when we come back, we've got more of Dan and his best of list for TV this year. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN, and we'll be back after the news. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. The opening bell at 5, the great Steve Cochran at 6. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in. We'll start them a little bit later. It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-720. We're going to talk about, we'll take this opportunity on this show this morning to talk about our annual, annually talking about the best Christmas movies, your favorites, maybe the weirdest ones that you watch every year. We'll get into that. Christmas movies at 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg joins us every 2 weeks, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. And we're talking about his picks for the best TV shows of 2018. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay, number 14. Oh, I love this show, too. Killing Eve. Tell everybody about this show.
I'm sure we need to move quicker because there are lots of shows in my top 20. But yes, Killing Eve is stylish, sexy, it's fun, it's dark, it's suspenseful. Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh are great, and I wish people were nominating both of them for awards as opposed to just Sandra Oh, because to me, you can't have one without the other, and I wish they could be nominated as a joint pairing.
Yeah,
they're so good. The show is really good,
and that's the thing. That's the thing, Dan. I personally want to thank you for insisting that I watch it, because I wasn't watching it, and then you said you need to watch this show, and I did, and it's great. So
it's an easy one. I knew you were going to like that one.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. And speaking of liking, and I would have put this one much higher on your list. Number 13 is The Good Place. The for me, the best show on broadcast television.
Absolutely the best show on broadcast television, and it was in certain drafts of my top 10 and then fell out. It's just an amazingly dynamic show, and I continue to love the fact that every three or four episodes it's becoming in a completely different show, and to some degree I wonder if that is a problem, because at some point they are going to run out of shows that this could be. But on the other hand, it's amazing that they've had stories, innovation, and originality for three seasons now, and so I guess it's not for me to wonder when they're going to run out of ideas. It's just to enjoy them while they got them.
Yeah, it's such a good show. Number 12, BoJack Horseman, another terrific show, and I love the fact that that Comedy Central is showing them now.
I find that I watch 2 minutes at the end of old BoJack episodes before the start of the Daily Show.
Right, right.
And they always make me laugh. And also, I can't tell you how much I appreciate getting to watch those 2 minutes as opposed to 2 minutes of Tosh.0. So
I agree with you. I agree with you 1,000% on that. Absolutely, yes.
But yes, BoJack is great. It turns out that BoJack was also number 12 on my list last year. And I think that I kind of, in my mind, pretended that the fourth season was a minor drop in quality. I don't think the fifth season was. It remains just a really, really special show that does more than it needs to at almost every turn. It's full of little tiny jokes, full of big emotional beats, and I want Will Arnett to get an Emmy nomination for the free churro episode, which was this season's standout.
Yeah, absolutely. Number 11 is Pose, which is a show that I have not seen. But I know that you really love it.
It is just such a very good show, and it's another show that isn't exactly what you expect it to be, and it deserves all of the credit it's gotten for the cast of trans actors and how progressive and inclusive the cast is. But it is also such a show that really and truly is about family and community and finding your place and finding your identity and finding who you are. And I don't think it should be a show that anybody wouldn't be able to watch. It is an amazing ensemble. I am still so pissed off at the Screen Actors Guild for not nominating it for drama ensemble, because this, to me, is everything an ensemble should be, and more people should watch Pose. First season is only 8 episodes, so folks should check it out.
Okay. All right. If we have time, I do want to get your reaction to the SAG nominations, because you had a very strong reaction to it. Let's get to your top 10, shall we? Number 10, Better Call Saul.
I just love me some Better Call Saul. It is not the most consistent show on TV. It is a show with 3 storylines, of which 2 are a little hit and miss. I don't always care what Mike is up to. I don't always know what Gus and Nacho are up to. But the main storyline, which continues to be Jimmy and Kim, is TV's best doomed romance. And Bob Odenkirk and Ray Seahorn, who does not get nearly enough credit, play it magically each week. And I promise you, and I've said this before and I still believe it, if you watch Better Call Saul, you will fall in love with Ray Seahorn so quickly. Mm-hmm. It'll be like a bolt out of the blue. She is so good, and she should be on every awards list, and the fact that she's not is a sham.
Okay. Okay, we talked about this one the last time you were on, when we were talking about the Golden Globe nominations, and that's A Very English Scandal, which comes in at number 9, which I still have not watched since the last time we spoke, but I know you spoke very highly of it the last time we had you on.
Yes, it is only 3 episodes, and it is funny and quirky and devastatingly powerful, and Hugh Grant and Ben Whishaw, both of them are fantastic actors who have been great in many things. I don't think either one of them has been better in anything, and who would have guessed that 2018, between this and Paddington 2, would be perhaps the best year of Hugh Grant's career. What a great year. And yeah, it's only 3 episodes, only 3 hours. People should check it out. It's really special and surprising.
Okay. Number 8, My Brilliant Friend.
Indeed. HBO's Italian language adaptation of the first of Elena Ferrante's Neapolitan Quartet. It's a beautiful period coming-of-age story. Wonderfully cast. The Italian actors are largely newcomers, certainly for American audiences they will be. And it's just a really good adaptation of a really good book. It's how to do adaptation right. It captures the details of the book, but also more than that, it captures the emotions and the emotional swing of the book. I think this is a special series, and it's special because it's so different from anything else on TV, and I love that HBO did this. I love that they did it in Italian because they didn't need to, and I love that they put it in their Sunday night prestige slot to make it clear this is something that people should pay heed to, and I think it is a show worthy of paying heed to.
Okay. Number 7, Big Mouth. Which just makes me laugh, in a good way, obviously.
I love Big Mouth. It is just such a rude and inappropriate and frequently gross show. And every time I think of it, I think of something grosser and more inappropriate than the moment before. And yet every single moment in the show is authentic and feels right and feels earned. It is a show that in any lesser hands could have felt kind of gross and bro-y, but instead puts so much effort into making sure that it gets the female perspective, and I just respect it so much for that, and I also love it because it's a show full of hilarious songs and wonderful vocal talent, and it's just a great show.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Number 6, Dear White People.
Dear White People, this would be Justin Simien's adaptation of Justin Simien's reasonably acclaimed movie from a few years ago. This is the second season of it, and it is a college series that does right by the college experience, and it's just smart, it's innovative, it tackles big issues, the cast is wonderful, and I wish more people were watching it. It's another Netflix show that struggles in the ratings, and it took entirely too long to get renewed for its most recent season. And all I can do is keep telling people to watch these shows. I told Netflix people that I had several of their shows in my top 10 and my top 20, and they were unable to guess which they were, because Netflix has their big shows, and apparently I like smaller Netflix shows.
I see. The ones that aren't as big as the others, yeah.
A little bit less loved, and okay. I'm okay with that.
Well, let's go to the next one then, because that's the case here, too. Number five on your list is The End of the Effing World.
Another Netflix show that was just able to sneak up. Netflix kind of announced it was coming about a week before it premiered at the very beginning of the year. I watched it all in one afternoon, I believe New Year's Eve of last year. And it's a show about two outcasts, one of whom may be a budding serial killer. And they're sort of strange road trip romance in the vein of Bonnie and Clyde or True Romance or Badlands. And if it matches with your sense of humor, you will love the show. And if it doesn't match with your sense of humor, you will probably turn it off within 5 to 10 minutes. And I find that reassuring. I like shows that declare what they are and who they're for very quickly, and this one absolutely does that. It is totally on my wavelength, and I am dreading what a second season is going to look like, because the first season was pretty much perfect on its own.
Right, I loved it too, and this is a show that also appeals to my sensibilities big time, and I watched it. It took me a couple of days, actually. It took me 2 days to watch it all the way through, but I just think it's great. But again, it's not for everyone, but I wish more people would watch it. I'm with you on that 100%.
So. For sure, it's not for everyone.
No, exactly. All right, Dan, hang on. Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. When we come back, we will get into the top four shows that Dan Feinberg picked for the best TV shows of 2018. And there you go. Okay. Welcome back, everyone. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And joining us right now is Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we are talking about Dan's choices for the best TV shows of 2018. And we're up to his fourth favorite show of the year. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you, Nick.
Okay, number four is The Americans. And for some reason, I don't know why, but I expected that to be higher on your list, and number four is very, very high. But I don't know why. I don't know, because I just expected, knowing you and the conversations that we've had, I expected the Americans to either be on the top or number two.
I swear there that I've said great and excited things about the top three as well. But yes, no, the Americans is wonderful. It is the great drama of this particular moment in time, and it went out really well. It's not the easiest thing to do, and it's not the easiest thing to do when you have a show in which there's a strong possibility that any of your characters could be killed or die or be outed or whatever at the least expected of moments. And the show's creators had to find a way to navigate the season in a way that was satisfying to both the most bloodthirsty but also most emotionally invested of fans. And I think they did a great job. We've talked extensively about how great Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys have been, and you know, awesome, and I'm glad that at least Matthew Rhys got an Emmy, and so that was worth it. But also Kedrick Salati as Henry, the oft neglected son, had a great final season, and Holly Taylor as Paige, also fantastic. Noah Emmerich never got an Emmy nomination for this show, which is utterly ridiculous. I do not know how he didn't get an Emmy nomination for the last season. Such a great performance and so integral to the arc of the show. This is yet another show that has not been nearly watched enough and that people are going to discover. And the common reaction that everyone is going to have in 5 to 10 years as they're watching the show is, why was I not just watching this live? What did I think the show was going to be that I didn't want to watch it live? And
Yeah,
I don't know what to answer.
It's fun. Well, the funny thing about that kind of thing is that's how most people got to The Wire. I mean, I was, like, we've talked about this before. I was on board in 2002, like from episode one. I was with The Wire, but it's so funny how that, like, years later, people are like, oh my God, it's like discovering it years later. And I think you're right. I think most people are going to discover The Americans in a couple of years. Yeah.
But I think it, you know, it happens with some frequency. Breaking Bad, at least people discovered it sooner. So Breaking Bad had three or four seasons where no one was watching it, and then people found it. But honestly, no one really ever found Mad Men. Mad Men was a show with a fairly minuscule audience right till the end. But people are going to discover that show forever. And, I have conversations constantly with people finding, say, for example, Halt and Catch Fire, who are like, this is a great show. Why did I not watch it? And the answer is almost always, I don't know. Why didn't you watch it? You should have.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking about shows that people should watch, your number three is one of my favorites of this past year, and that's Succession.
Yep, another show that did not have people watching it at the beginning, and I'm not sure even by the end that it had developed an audience, but people have been talking about this show a lot, and I really feel like this is a show that maybe is on the verge of an explosion, an audience explosion, when it returns for its second season. Because I think that I can't think of many shows that have gained critical momentum in the way this one did. The initial reviews, a lot of them were, oh, look, it's another rich family. I don't care about their problems. They're all awful people. And I think a lot of people, as they went along, gradually began to realize, A, that the show never claimed they weren't awful people and didn't really care if you loved these people, but maybe wanted you to understand them. And I think after 10 episodes, you understand these awful characters and you really feel for them even as you're laughing with them. To me, this show is a brilliant dark comedy satire of wealth in America, but for other people, it's a dark drama with some comedic moments, and either one is fine. I'm not going to tell people they're wrong because people should watch Succession.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's funny as hell, and the cast is great. And I all the time I single out Kieran Culkin because I never thought that kind of performance could come from him based on like his previous work, but he's phenomenal in it. So. Number two on your number two on your list would be my number one, and that's Atlanta.
Yep, that one was, this one's easy, and if it had been number one, that would have been perfectly satisfying to me as well. It was a great second season for a great show that had a difficult time having to live up to the first season, and so they responded by simply making a second season that was in no way like the first season, and that was in no way like anything else on TV. And we talked extensively and have talked extensively about the Teddy Perkins episode, which is, to me, without any question, 2018's best single episode of television.
Yeah, me too. I agree.
But if you look, there were five or six or seven episodes that were, if not equally good, that were little mini revolutions of their own. And just every single week you tune into Atlanta not exactly knowing what show it is that you're going to be watching, not necessarily knowing who the star of the show is that you're going to be watching. And if it was if it was Lakeith Stanfield, that was a pretty great show to be watching. If it was Donald Glover, that was a pretty great show to be watching. If it was Brian Tyree Henry, that was a fantastic show to be watching. The couple weeks that it was Ozzie Beetz's show, those were great episodes.
Yeah.
So an amazingly versatile cast, any of them capable of carrying episodes. And I'm glad that FX has given Donald Glover the chance to just sort of keep doing whatever he wants to with this. And now it's going to be interesting to see how he tops season two and season three. And I guess the answer is going to be in unexpected ways.
Okay, number one is locally, we're very happy that you chose this as number one, as your number one, Dan. America to Me, number one for the TV shows of 2018.
So I know that there have definitely been people in Chicago who haven't loved the way that it represented Oak Park and River Forest High School and how it represented the city's public school system. But yes, Steve James's documentary series on Stars, I am constantly encountering people who haven't even heard of it, and part of that is because people don't know necessarily to look to Stars for quality programming, and I guess it's up to Stars to keep building up a roster and convincing them, because they do have good shows. You know, people watch Outlander, but people would also like Vita. They would also like the Miami football unscripted show that was paired with American to Me. But American to Me is the word I kept using in my blurb here was substantive. It is simply a show that has weight, that is about things. And whether it's about the white privilege, whether it's about the achievement gap in schools and how it impacts people based on gender, race, or class, it is a show that is constantly having big ideas on its mind. And yet, if you actually watch it on a week-to-week basis, it's also a series of 12 wonderful character portraits that in any given week inspire you, make you sad, make your heart soar. It is a show that is every bit as emotionally substantive as it is intellectually substantive. And, you know, people intimidated by documentaries, it's a John Hughes movie also, only with perhaps a little bit more on its mind. It's just such a great show. And I saw it, the first 5 episodes at Sundance way back in January, and it never left my mind entire year.
Steve James is one of the best documentary filmmakers ever, and he's a Chicago treasure, and we're lucky to have him here. He does amazing work. So, well, there it is. Those are your favorite shows of the year, Dan, and people can read all about it, Hollywood Reporter, and check you out at Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, FIEN. Dan, it went by really quickly this time, as it always does, but we will talk to you again in the new year. And have a happy new year, Dan, and we'll talk to you in January.
Same to you and yours, Nick. Okay.
Take care, Dan. Dan Feinberg, everybody. He is the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. All right, we're going to take a break for the news here on 720 WGN.